We are back for another BBP edition. I'm Lindsay Patterson, joined by Cincinnati Inquirer beat writer Tyler Dragon and our man behind the scenes working hard, Kareem Alghazar. How are you guys doing?
Doing pretty good. How are you doing?
You know, another week. Another L.
I'm doing well. This is my first day back this week after spending the weekend with watching my son while my wife goes to work. She works one weekend a month.
Yeah. So you had little guy, watched a little ball. What'd you guys do?
We watched the Bearcats win.
Bearcats,
Cincinnati team keep rolling along. And then we watched the football. I had like my little war room set up in the living room. We got his toys, and I got my toys, you know, all the iPad and the phone and the TV going. And I had my little war room set up. So it was good.
So besides the Bengals game, yeah, which games did you watch?
I got the Red Zone going, man.
Oh, okay. I'm jealous. I'm too cheap for it. I won't do it yet. I won't bite the bullet.
So you're a fantasy football guy. Did your fantasy football team win?
In one league, I tied 131-131. And shockingly, it's the second tie of the year for me in that league. And then in what I call the big money league, I'm not doing so hot. 2-4. Honestly, Mixon's killing me.
Oh, man.
He went for it.
Yeah, he's killing me. So that's where we stand. That was my weekend and my first day back recording this on Tuesday.
Baltimore, though, that's where Tyler was, and that's an underrated city. It's kind of on my bucket list. There are several things I want to do as far as checking out the stadium and just the area in general. How was your weekend besides that ball game that happened?
Yeah, Baltimore is kind of my home away from home. As you guys know, I went to Howard University, so they had homecoming this weekend, so I got a chance to go to D.C., celebrate homecoming, and then my family, my parents actually live in the D.C. area, so I got the chance to kind of extend my weekend a little bit before the game, got a chance to spend time with family and friends before Sunday, so I had a good weekend, a lot better than the Bengals.
D.C. is and saying it's underrated is silly because everybody knows about D.C., but I went there a couple weekends ago, and it is a must-visit place. If you have time, go do it. But guys, Sunday wasn't a fun day for the Bengals. They dropped to 0-6 on this season, and I don't even know in the next couple weeks if they are going to get a W before they head off across the pond. But the good, bad, and the ugly, if you want to pull any good away from it, I'll start with that. Auden Tate right now. A wide receiver who, as Zach Taylor mentioned on Monday, his arrow keeps pointing up. What does he bring to this offense right now that's just lacking some talent?
Yeah, it's good that you mentioned that. I have a story going up today about Auden Tate. He's having a career year. I know it's just his second season, but you can see his transcending, and he is moving upward, just like Zach Taylor said. He had a career high in receiving yards, and week three, I believe, he had a career high in reception. So he is getting a better rapport with Andy Dalton, and he has obviously a big catch radius at 6'5". He had a few great catches on Sunday, one on a dig route where he fully extended his body and caught a pass, and then in the fourth quarter late, he caught a jump ball for 29 yards, I believe. So he's had a couple really nice catches in week six, and throughout the season he has helped fill the void of AJ Green. You can't all the way fill the void of a 7-time Pro Bowler, but he has done his part, and he's the second best receiver on this team right now. And the good thing is that if AJ Green comes back, that's just another weapon that you can have that is reliable in Auden Tate, because he is proving that he can be a good possession receiver down the field.
You know, we saw in training camp last season in 2018, Auden Tate making some good catches in preseason of that year. He made some nice plays, made some good catches. It seemed like he knew what he was doing out there on the field. So the three of us over this training camp, this past training camp, talked about Auden Tate in the similar vein as Trey Hopkins, right? So what he brings is, yes, it's only his second year, and he has had a couple of drops over the last couple of years, but he brings some sure hands, particularly demonstrated in that last game. Those two catches that Tyler mentioned were very nice catches that inspire confidence. And then you saw a little bit of some nice timing with Andy Dalton. Like, you know, as they say, you know, when the receiver first comes out of his break, the ball's right there. We've seen it. We saw it a few times against against the Ravens. So I think, you know, again, also when we talked about Jermaine Pratt, this is the time to play Jermaine Pratt. This is the time to, I mean, they, out of necessity, partly, to play Auden Tate more. And if he's doing well, keep him in there. Again, we have nothing to lose now at this point.
Yeah, in the second quarter there, he did have a couple back shoulder catches, and that is all about timing. And those are hard catches because you have to have your timing right with the quarterback.
In mentioning the confidence, Kareem, one thing that I definitely noticed with Auden Tate, we saw it last year in training camp, and just this year in general, I always remember talking to Tyler Boyd after one training camp in July this year, and he had Auden Tate and put his arm around him, and he said, it's only going to take that one game, and we'll always have that with Tyler Boyd from that Baltimore game that grew his confidence and what we got from Tyler Boyd in 2018, and he's there to be a leader. And look, AJ Green might be sidelined, but he's there to give confidence and leadership, and those are two guys to look at if you're Auden Tate, to have a locker room like that. I don't care if AJ Green is injured or not. He's still there. He's still putting 12, 13-hour days in. He's going to help Auden Tate whatever he needs because he does travel with the team. And then you have a guy like Tyler Boyd who's out there too. And those are two good role models for him. And I also, with Auden Tate, what I find interesting, because we did see that in his training camp last year, but do you feel like, and to give Zach Taylor some kind of credit, he's out there calling the plays. Do you feel like that's just an asset to Auden Tate?
Yeah. 100%. I mean, I'm really glad we're starting the conversation with Auden Tate. And the reason is because I don't have much else to say about this team. So to talk about Auden Tate, 100% is an asset. I mean, I think, you know, Tyler can expand on that.
Yeah, he was the lone bright spot on offense in week six, and he's been one of the only bright spots this entire season. There are a few players on the roster that are playing well. I think we can all say that. And one of those few players is Auden Tate. He has risen to the occasion without A.J. Green, without John Ross here, and he has become that secondary receiver behind Tyler Boyd. And that's what the Bengals need as much as they can get from the receiver position. I mean, last week, Humphrey was pretty much following Tyler Boyd around the field, and that's why Boyd really wasn't a factor in that game. The Ravens were double teaming him when Humphrey wasn't on him one-on-one. And then so Auden Tate really picked up the slack, and he had arguably his best game of his career.
Every week we got to talk about that offensive line, as we mentioned all the way back to week one, a little musical chairs out there. It doesn't hurt to use Billy Price at left guard, and that's something that we'd started to see last week, and he was in Baltimore and he got some reps there. Wasn't the best of games for him, but on a positive note, John Jerry has looked better than Andre Smith in a small sample size at left tackle.
Yeah, Jerry did give up two sacks, but some of those were coverage sacks on the Ravens. Their defensive backs did a nice job in that game. Overall, the offensive line did okay. Dalton was only sacked twice. They still cannot run block very well. I mean, it's a different technique when you're run blocking and pass blocking. Pass blocking, you're dropping back and really waiting for the defenders to come to you. When you're run blocking, you have to go forward and create a push, create holes, and they still can't do that at all. Joe Mixon, Geo, they have no running room. So I look for the Bengals to continue to try to upgrade their run blocking scheme. They need to have a better game plan going forward, perhaps get two tight ends in there and try to help get some running lanes, because right now they are atrocious running the football.
And to Tyler Eifert's credit, the run blocking, he has helped in that situation a little bit. I mean, it's been pretty negative all around, but using him in different ways. We saw CJ Uzomah catch a pass out there. Tyler came up big, and then seeing Gio and Joe at the same time, that's just something they've got to try, because at this point, you're 0-6 on the season. It's going nowhere fast. The division's going to get out of reach, because honestly, the Steelers are making a tiny bit of run behind the Baltimore Ravens. I think the Browns are the most inconsistent team in the NFL, and definitely in the AFC North. So why not just try different things with that offense right now, Kareem?
You know, speaking of the division, yeah, definitely tried. And you know, I was kind of glad to see the switch up the offensive line. You know, they put they put Billy Price in. Thought that was a good move. He played okay, but it, you know, I think there was marginal improvement. Is that the best way to describe it?
Yeah.
Yep. And then again, speaking of the division, the way the Browns are playing, and then of course the way the Bengals are playing. Yes, are the Ravens the best in the division? Yes. But if something happens to Lamar Jackson, and I don't think he's going to last the entire season, they're sunk.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then you had the Browns. Could the Steelers?
I'm just saying.
Well,
they're poking right up. Their defense is looking okay.
Well, the defense is okay, and they're good enough at the line of scrimmage. Actually, their offensive line is pretty darn good.
Mm-hmm.
And their defensive line is pretty darn good.
I'll say this. RG3 is the Ravens' backup quarterback. Now, there's a clear drop-off, but RG3, if healthy, if his knees hold up, and we haven't seen him in a while, he's still a mobile quarterback and can do some of the plays that Lamar Jackson can make. Now, I'm not saying he's Lamar Jackson now.
Bit of a drop off there, Tyler.
Now, no, Lamar Jackson is the best mobile quarterback we've seen since Vic, but RG3 can move around there, and I wouldn't say Lamar Jackson got hurt, then the Ravens are done. I wouldn't say that, but there is a drop off there.
I think he can run the offense light, right? Or mm-hmm. not run the things that Lamar Jackson does light.
Yeah,
right.
man's Lamar Jackson.
Yeah. So I think, you know, if the Steelers hang around, like we talked about in the previous podcast, you got to compete at the line of scrimmage. They win at the line of scrimmage.
Yes.
Okay, so they're winning at the line of scrimmage. I mean, if they can continue to do that and keep the quarterback that they play upright, they got a shot in this division. As good as the Ravens.
So
the Browns are all over the place.
You two are already out on the Browns.
Oh, 100%.
Not even second place in the division.
Nah,
I think they could get second in the division.
Maybe because of Myles Garrett.
No, I don't know. I'm talking about. I don't know who if they can get second. I'm just thinking about who's winning the division.
Oh, well, right? I think the Ravens obviously are clear-cut favorites, and I picked them before the season.
Right.
They're going to win the division. Number two, I still believe the Browns will be number two. I mean, it's not going to take a great record to be second place in the AFC North now.
Mm-hmm.
So,
but the Browns' offensive line can't pass block.
They can't. I still believe the Browns have enough talent overall to be second in the AFC North.
And I want to stay with the AFC North real quick because I watched them on Monday Night Football and just watching the Steelers and Devin Bush. I mean, Bengals fans have to look at that and be like, oh, the Steelers jumped ahead of them for a playmaker like him. And he was a game changer in Monday Night Football.
Yeah, he's been a game changer the whole season for the Steelers. The Steelers got a good one in Devin Bush. He had a big game against the Chargers. He's had a good rookie season. He's in the running for a defensive rookie of the year in the NFL right now.
It's hurting them defensively when you look at that right now. And AJ Green, I'm going to put this question on you guys right now because a lot of people, they've jumped on board. A couple weeks ago, it was my hot take to trade AJ Green. And now everyone's like, yeah, go ahead and do it. It's a good business move. But also at this point, Kareem, if you are going to keep AJ Green and you are not trading him, you better pay the guy because that has Andrew Whitworth written all over it.
Right. I think they will pay him. They just want to see, honestly, probably like one game.
Mm-hmm.
I'm serious.
At this point.
They're like, yeah, let's say, that's not a knock on AJ. That's just in general. Like, okay, I just want to see one game where he can show us that he's still AJ or really close to being AJ that we know. One game, then they'll pay him. And I think that's the way to, because if they lose AJ and not get anything,
that has Cincinnati sports written all over it.
This fan base is going to lose it, okay? Because AJ's beloved. He's a great player. You need to keep him here. Fine. Okay, you don't keep him here. Okay, fine. At least get something for him, some kind of draft pick. But if he just walks like a Whitworth situation, following the Whitworth situation, I mean, it could really blow up.
Yeah, I mean, you hire Zach Taylor, who likes to run 11 personnel. That's three receivers and one running back, one tight end. 11 personnel, you need a great or at least a really good receiving core. The Rams have one. You want one in Cincinnati. And with that, obviously, you need A.J. Green in that lineup. A.J. Green, Tyler Boyd, John Ross healthy. That is one of the best trio of receivers that you can have, and that is something you can build upon when you play 11 personnel. So if you let AJ Green walk, I mean, you have a huge, huge hole to fill at your number one receiver position. You already have Boyd in the slot. You have Ross, who can take the top off the defense. He's your speed downfield threat. And where is that number one guy on the outside? And that's AJ.
Another thing, you hit, you know, the draft, we always talk about these picks, right? It's, yes, you have all these multitude of picks, but it's so important to hit, right? The Bengals hit with AJ Green, right? So I always think about, oh, at least, you know, you can get a first round pick for X player. I always think, well, yeah, okay, you trade away, it's a Khalil Mack situation, right? You trade away Khalil Mack, all right, you get this number one pick, but now you have a hole that you need to fill, a huge hole in that pass rush. Could be the same situation with AJ. Okay, you trade AJ Green. All right, now we have this first-round pick, but now we have to fill this number one receiver spot. Do we do it in free agency? Probably not. The Bengals historically don't do that large free agent splash. They do some stuff in free agency, but not to that degree. Then you're hoping you hit at a draft pick, which may not happen. Just pay him.
Yeah.
He comes on the field healthy, plays well, plays somewhat remotely to what we're accustomed to AJ Green playing. Pay the man.
Pay the man. Yeah. He wants to be here. He wants to be in Cincinnati. He wants to end his career in the city. He wants to be the all-time leading receiver for the Bengals. If you have a player like that who has ingratiated himself with the city, the team, you got to pay him. You got to pay him.
Where else can you find a receiver? I mean, besides Larry Fitzgerald. And when AJ Green says things, look, there are players all the time, there are coaches all the time who will say things because they feel like they have to. And it's the media, it's national media, it's local media. AJ Green is so different from that, because just his quotes alone on Friday was like, look, I have enough money. It's not about the money. This team took a shot on me. AJ Green has been that humble guy his whole entire life. He does a lot of great things behind the scenes, and I truly believe he loves Cincinnati and he wants to finish his career here. And I believe he's on the sideline and feels like, I'm not helping my team right now, and that bothers AJ Green more than anything. And Jeff Hobson from Bengals.com actually wrote a great piece on him, and he talked to him, and he was spending 12 to 13 hour days just on off days, on Tuesdays, Wednesdays, any days that he could be there to go from in and out, because he wants to be back on the field. The good news, he was back out there on a limited basis last week. I think the biggest question now, and Kareem mentioned it, they're going to want to see a game out of him. They're going to want to see him take the field. But you dropped 0-6, you dropped 0-7. If he doesn't play versus Jacksonville, is he traveling to London? Are you trying to put him into a season that's going to be soon, possibly out of reach for this team?
Well, it all depends on the Bengals' plan. I mean, if you have a plan to sign AJ Green long term, you're going to want to err on the side of caution and have him out there when he is 100% healthy, because you have to think about the long term future of the face of your franchise. And if you're going to sign him to a lucrative contract at the end of this season or in the offseason, you want to make sure he can be on the field to pay out for that contract. And so I believe the Bengals are thinking about that in the negotiations, and while Green is on the rehab field training. He's not 100% yet. He's getting very close to 100%. When I saw him run individual drills and go through cone drills, he did look pretty good. He wasn't favoring the ankle. He was a little bit loose on those breaks. You would like to see receivers have sharper turns and sharper in and out of those breaks, but I can attribute that to rust. Overall, though, he has been looking good, and to his credit, his spirits have been up this entire time. He's been in and out the locker room, giving receivers advice, encouraging teammates. So he's been a leader in and out of that locker room while he's been on the mend.
Do you think he's active this week?
That's a big question.
That is a big question. I
think he's going to be active. That's just my random hunch based on no intel at all.
I asked Zach Taylor that on Monday, and he said that Green is still labeled as week to week. Wednesday's practice is going to be telling to see what Green does. When you practice in full pads, though, that is a really good sign that you are at the end of the finish line.
Right.
And the way he practiced, although it was on a limited basis, it leads me to believe that this week, the week after in London, or right after the bye, those three games are, is in my opinion, is when we will see Green make his season debut. So I know I'm giving you a long-winded answer and I'm not definitive, but this week or the week in London or the following week after the bye is when you'll see AJ Green. That is my gut feeling.
The good news is we'll have another podcast coming out at the end of the week, so we'll have an update after practice has happened on Wednesday to see if AJ Green is back out there on a limited basis. I would be a little surprised to see him out there, but to go full pads like you mentioned last week and get a pretty much a full week of practice in with the starters is really telling for AJ Green. And believe it or not, even if this, you know, fans on the sideline feel the season's out of reach, that team, that locker room, they don't feel that way at all. And AJ Green is one of those people who they could be 0-15 and he'd want to play in the season finale, which they would never do that, but I'm just saying he would want to. And speaking of vets right now, Gio Bernard, some of the players were talking on Monday and after the game. He's a quiet guy. Kareem, you've been around the guy enough. Just a vet who does his job, goes to work, and you know, nothing. He spoke up. He pretty much talked to his team, vocal, frustrated. Tyler, did you hear any more about that?
Yeah, he really, after the game, after the loss, he went up and talked to the team, told everybody really to keep their heads up, keep their spirits high, and keep fighting for a win. And to his credit and to the whole team's credit, they are understandably frustrated, but they are keeping their heads up and they are still keeping their spirits up and they are still going out there each and every day at practice and these games, and they are fighting still for a win. And I mean, you can see it in that week six game at the fourth quarter when the Ravens went on that 18 play drive. They held them without a touchdown. And a lot of teams, I mean, the game's pretty much over. The Ravens are running down their throat. And a lot of teams would have saw Lamar Jackson just go up and score a touchdown and Mark Ingram running up the middle for a touchdown. The Bengals held them and held them to a field goal and kept that game within a reasonable shot of winning. Obviously that they weren't anywhere near, I didn't have in my mind that they were going to win, but they still showed fight and showed the heart and determination to keep Ingram and keep Lamar Jackson out of the end zone in that debilitating drive, really, because when you go on an 18 play drive and take up 10 minutes of the fourth quarter, that can be demoralizing. And to their credit, they kept on fighting, and then they scored a touchdown in an ensuing possession when Dalton ran it in. So that just shows some of the heart that this team has, and they're going to continue to fight despite their record.
You know, I'm thinking about that as when, you know, Lindsay brought it up, that did the Bengals on offense have a rah-rah guy? They have Joe Mixon, certainly. But a rah-rah guy who can get the troops fired up and with credentials, right? Mixon can probably get them fired up, doesn't quite have the credentials just yet. Dalton's a pretty subdued guy, has the credentials, but that's not his style. A.J. Green is a leader. He's not playing right now. He's done it in the past. He's had locker room conversations address the entire team, but he's not playing right now. So who's left to do it? And I'm thinking, good on Gio. Because Gio is the veteran, and normally he's pretty quiet. Yes, he's always kind of optimistic. He's a fighter, but they needed, it's good for him. They needed someone to 0-6. They need someone to come and talk to him as a team. And then I think about defensively, do they have somebody like that? They have Dre, and maybe Carlos Dunlap can do some of that. So, good. I mean, I think Gio recognized a necessity, a void, and he filled it. And it's good. It's good because they need that leadership, I think, particularly on the offensive side of the ball.
Sean Williams will do that, too, on the defensive end. He has been hurt. He's playing hurt, really, on one leg out there. And his teammates see that and admire his leadership and his determination to still keep on fighting despite, you know, really playing on one leg and playing that way less than 100%.
Guys, I'll get back to the practice field on Wednesday, and we will have another podcast by the end of the week to look forward to Jacksonville as they head back to Paul Brown Stadium. I want to go to Monday Night Football. There's a couple things from that Packers and Lions game around the NFL right now. First, I have one confession. I'm not sure if you guys feel this way or not. I'm a big snack person. I love me a good snack. I mean, candy bars, anything like that. And a nice little bowl of cereal. Actually, not little. I'm a huge, large bowl of cereal at night kind of person.
Oh, you eating a giant punch bowl of cereal over there?
Oh, you know it. You know, not the little bowls. I mean, I get the big one out. And I mean, from Captain Crunch, Fruity Pebbles, to last night, I chose a little Raisin Bran. And I know it sounds like a boring cereal, but I went for it. Was watching a little Monday Night Football, nice big bowl of cereal, maybe two bowls of cereal. But I was loving it. And it kind of brought to my mind, first of all, big bowls of cereal are underrated. Second of all,
true.
I threw out sugar on Cheerios. And I got hammered on social media like I just said the worst thing in the world. From Twitter to Facebook, everyone's like, you don't put sugar on Cheerios. Am I like the only person in this world that puts sugar on Cheerios?
No, you are not alone, Lindsay. First of all, I do like Cheerios, but my cereal of choice is Wheaties. But when I do eat Cheerios, I do put sugar on Cheerios. I put sugar on Wheaties. And yeah, so you are not alone. Sugar is good on cereal, except if the cereal is already sweet. Like Honey Nut Cheerios.
No, you don't do it on Honey
Nut. You don't put sugar on Honey Nut Cheerios.
I've heard people putting sugar on all sorts types of cornflakes, whatever. So I don't think it's odd to put sugar on that. But I think the reason people eat Cheerios is because there isn't any sugar. So you're going to go ahead and put sugar on it. I think that's why they're killing you. Now, I buy the Honey Nut Cheerios. So I like a little bit of sweetness.
Mm-hmm.
So go ahead. Why don't you just buy some Honey Nut Cheerios and we can just not
change in the game over here.
Well, see, the Honey Nut Cheerios, you have the honey flavor. Mm-hmm. With Cheerios and you put sugar on it, you don't have that honey flavor. So maybe you just want, you know, a different type of taste.
Sure. I'm just, you know.
That big bowl cereal and
I like Raisin Bran too.
Raisin Bran, man. People are like, oh, that's a boring cereal. No.
It
gets the job done. You are full and it put a nice little 2% milk on it. You can choose the milk of your choice, but I choose 2% every single time. I can't do fat-free. It's disgusting. I'm just going to say that right now. But that's besides the point. Again, big bowl of cereal, underrated at night. It's a good little snack.
See, I don't like raisins. So Raisin Bran is just Wheaties with raisins. So I just have the Wheaties.
Well, you can choose that way. That sounds pretty
boring.
This
is a rabbit hole because I like Frosted Mini Wheats. See,
I love Frosted Mini Wheats.
I like Frosted Mini Wheats too.
Those are filler.
I eat that without milk.
But that's what I'm just saying. That nice little bowl of cereal that caps them off. But I was watching some Monday Night Football last night, and if you woke up this morning, you didn't have to watch a down of football to know that something went wrong. And look, I'm not one of those people. I'm not sure how you guys feel, but officiating in the NFL, I hate complaining about calls. I don't think one team gets them more than the other. You can feel that way, and maybe that's just my bias. I don't believe in that. I hear it all the time with the Bengals. Fans will say, you know, the Bengals don't get all the calls. I feel like it's just an officiating problem. There's some issues going on in the NFL right now. How in the world do you fix it?
Yeah, I feel sorry for the Detroit Lions. Trey Flowers got called for not one, but two illegal hands to the face, and neither of them were illegal hands to the face.
To the chest.
And it had a direct impact on the game and pretty much gifted the Packers the win at home in Lambeau Field. If I was a Detroit Lions fan, a player, I would be so frustrated. I would be getting a fine in the mail because I would be talking about the officials, and I would not care because good officials and a good officiated game is when you do not notice them on the field.
Okay, so that's a great – I like that you mentioned that because for a long time, it took me – I still feel this way about football, the sport in general. There's too many stoppages. There's too many, you know, you got to review this and look at that and the penalty. There's too many stoppages because I come, again, from a soccer and basketball background where the game is generally continuous.
Mm-hmm.
So in general, that's what annoys me about football. All the penalties, all the bells and whistles, whatever, clock stoppages, all this other 2-minute warning. Why do we need a 2-minute warning? What is a 2-minute warning? You know what I'm saying? So anyway, so for a long time, I felt that the officials have been getting in the way of the game anyway. Now, when you look at it and you kind of zoom into this season specifically, I don't really care much for the reviewable PI. I think that just adds another layer of slowing down the game, another layer of uncertainty. And I think as fans, we, and probably folks in the league office, have to accept the fact that if a penalty is called, okay, the reason we get so upset is because of the all the reviewable chances we can review something. So maybe if we just take out all the reviews, then it's just like, okay, penalty's called. Okay, let's move on.
See,
you know what I'm saying? Because now they're like, let's go back. Is that illegal hands to the chest reviewable?
See,
should we review that? Let's review that. And then everybody gets a little bit more frustrated. Yes, you want to make the calls. You want the officials to make good calls the right time, the first time, so you don't have to use review. But I feel like in this lately, with all this review capability, it gets people more frustrated.
Well, unfortunately, illegal hands to the face is not reviewable.
Right, I knew that.
And I'm
just saying, like,
I'm actually on the opposite side though, because I rather you get the call right,
certainly,
than get it wrong and then have a huge impact on a game. So if getting the call right means that you have to go review and we're sitting around for 5 minutes, then I'm just going to sit around for 5 minutes so you have the call right, because I don't want a game being decided by officiating and by egregious and by egregious calls. Yes, you do need to call less stuff.
Keep
but if
the game moving.
But if you're going to call it, get it right. Mm. Don't get it wrong.
But that's the thing, and I agree with Kareem. I'm watching that game last night, and every single time I'm watching the NFL, I'm waiting for a flag. Like, that can't be a good play anymore. If you play in the secondary, good luck in the NFL because you honestly can't make any good plays.
But they don't know either. Like, sometimes I'm like, sometimes when I see a little jostling back and forth between the defensive back and the receiver and they let the play go, I'm like, they're both kind of going at it. They're both, you know, nothing's too aggressive. I'm glad they let the play go.
Yeah.
And then you see an identical play in the same game and there's a
flag.
And now you're just like, as a defensive back, like, wait a minute. Like, four plays ago, I did the exact same thing.
And
nobody called anything.
Yeah, there are too many
they are ruining the game.
Flags on the field. And it's gotten to a point when if you're a DB, if you watch the game and there's an incomplete ball on third down and it's like a tight play, DBs look around at the official
everyone
to make sure there's no flag on the field.
It's crazy.
Gotten to that point where they're just accustomed, okay, it's incomplete, we made a good play, hold on, is there a flag? Okay, now we can celebrate.
Right.
Every single game, DBs do that.
And I'm actually going to play it off of that when we talked about the secondary. Unfortunate news, as we're actually recording this podcast right now, William Jackson III could be out for a couple weeks.
Well, man, he's like the best player back there.
They need the help back there. That's a concern right now when William Jackson III could be out for multiple weeks right now. And again, those are reports coming from NFL Network right now. So more to be determined as the Bengals hit the practice field as the week goes on. But man, we're just moving on in subjects. And I happen to look at Twitter and something else pops up for the secondary, for this defense. Hmm. Not good news for the Cincinnati Bengals.
Yeah, when you have Dre Kirkpatrick nicked up and William Jackson nicked up, it's not a good sign for this Bengals team, this Bengals secondary, this Bengals defense. They need all the help they can get, and the injury bug has definitely been a factor for the Bengals.
That early bye would have been really nice for them. Right about now, maybe. Maybe before they head back home to Paul Brown Stadium and they go to London. But yes, guys, plenty to talk about as the week goes on. But what's up on Cincinnati.com?
So I have a piece on mobile quarterbacks. The Bengals have had very, very much they have had trouble against mobile quarterbacks. Kyler Murray had a career day. Lamar Jackson had a historic day. He was the first quarterback in the Super Bowl era with at least 200 yards passing, 150 yards rushing in a single game. And then, as I mentioned earlier in the podcast, the piece on Alden Tate is going up today.
Plenty to follow if you're up on Cincinnati.com. Again, a photo gallery from this past week. And the reason I'm going to plug this right now, I plug it every week, but there is some sweet photos. Auden Tate, he's doing his best AJ Green impression up there. Sam Green was on the trip, and Kareem and Sam Green will have you covered as the Bengals head to Paul Brown Stadium this week. Check out the photo gallery in Cincinnati.com over on E&Q Sports on Twitter and E&Q Bengals on Instagram. Thanks for joining us.